You are listening to RudolfSteinerAudio.com. If you are listening to the podcast of this, it is located at RudolfSteiner.podbean.com. And please consider becoming a patron. This is Collected Works, Volume 316, Cycle of Lectures by Rudolf Steiner, entitled Understanding Healing, Meditative Reflections on Deepening Medicine Through Spiritual Science. This is Lecture 8, the end of the Christmas course, and there's also the Easter course after this in the same book. This is given in Dornach on the 9th of January, 1924. My dear friends, it is of course only possible to refer to some things aphoristically here, which in the course of time you will inevitably come across in one way or another, if what you have experienced here finds its corresponding continuation in your connection with the medical movement at the Gertianum. It should, after all, be emphasized that there can be no healing in opposition to karma. A physician's attitude must essentially be that we cannot heal in opposition to karma. A physician must face in two directions in his attitude with regard to even the most basic question of the intent to heal. The one direction is the unassailable will that karma be fulfilled. A physician needs this will, that karma be fulfilled, above all with regard to himself, because you have seen, my dear friends, that what the physician uses for his patients loses its efficacy in a certain way when applied to himself. It is true that it can in turn be transformed to work for himself. But right now it is enough for you to know what I have said about it. The physician does, of course, also remain subject to karma with regard to his health. But as soon as the attitude exists, which I have spoken about, when therapeutic knowledge penetrates the soul as deeply as I said, then we can say that the awareness of karma is increasingly transformed into the pure revelation of karma. Karma has two sides. On the one hand, you have to look at karma in such a way that in the sequence of lives on earth, you relate your destiny to your previous one. In such a case, karma is the expression of the product of your previous lives on earth. But you also have to think of karma directly in the fifth or sixth following life on earth, in the life on earth that follows this one 5 or 6 lives away. What is happening now will have consequences then, that is, when you will see the final result. If you think this thought properly to the end, it will be clear to you that karma is also something in development, that what is happening now adds something to karma. We can say that our deeds redirect karma in a certain way, in one or another direction. Anyone who understands karma cannot be a fatalist. The one direction is that of karma. It provides firmness and security in life. It provides a firm standpoint. But the other direction is this one, that the will to heal must exist. This will must never be compromised. It must always work therapeutically in such a way that we can say we have done everything possible, even if we are of the opinion that the patient cannot be healed. Such an opinion must be suppressed. Everything must be done to heal the patient. I simply allude to that aphoristically. The most important thing today is that we continue to study esoterically those things which cause our soul forces to awaken in our medical studies. And here you have to consider that for the physician, the content of such esoteric knowledge must indeed entail a special activity, assume a specific form. It will simply not be enough for the physician to look at things as they are looked at in normal life, and as is done today in normal science. Science does not appeal to the special soul forces which human beings do not have in normal life, but on the contrary, places great value on not appealing to such soul forces. But such general perceptions are not enough for any substance or process in the world to reveal its healing powers. Things only reveal their healing powers when we approach them with certain soul forces which have been awoken. It is now up to you to awaken those soul forces step by step so that things talk to you about the way in which they can help human beings through you, through your medical knowledge. But in order for that to happen, it is important that what I have told you in the last 2 days about the attitude of the physician is deepened much, much more in your souls. Let me make a simple observation in the way it should really be made in a medical course. Here it will be aphoristic, but if there is enough time, the matter will not be aphoristic, but will develop naturally before the soul of the medical student. Take a look at what is revealed through the shape of the bony calvarium. We can draw an outline of it. Look at what is revealed in the shape of the bony calvarium and contrast it with what is revealed to you when you look at a long bone, let us say the femur, which I will draw in outline. Now these things do not exist in isolation, but the bony calvarium has the various physical forces surrounding it. Equally, the long bone has various forces around it. But when you look at this long bone, it will never reveal its essence to you other than if you look at it in the context of the whole of the cosmos. Now imagine that here we have the long bone. Its forces pass along its length and point toward the center of the earth when human beings acquire the physical posture they need to develop. But that is not the most important thing. The most important thing is that it aligns these forces with the axis between the center of the earth and the moon. So those things which are aligned, like the femoral long bone or the upper arm or like the muscles in those locations, are integrated into the forces that connect the earth with the moon. You can imagine it like this. Here you have the earth, and forces flare up from the earth toward the moon. And everything is harnessed into these forces, which has the alignment of, let us say, the femur, when the human being stands or walks. In contrast, all those things which are positioned like the calvarium are arranged to coincide with the movement of Saturn. The rotational forces of Saturn are at work in them, so that we can say, human beings are formed from below upward through the connection between Earth and Moon. They are closed off through what lies in the rotational force of Saturn. Both types of force are in opposition. If you look at the former forces, those which lie in the connection between the Earth and the Moon, then these forces contain everything which gives human beings their sculpted form, which builds them up three-dimensionally. We might say that these forces contain a secret sculptor who builds up the human being three-dimensionally, whereas there is constant catabolism in the other forces. In the latter, the matter which builds up human beings sculpturally is dispersed again. So when you cut your nails, you are in the Saturn forces with your scissors. When you eat, then the direction of this component, it is characterized by the direction away from the earth, is toward the moon. All forces aligned with the direction of the moon are anabolic. All forces aligned with the direction of Saturn disperse the human being. And the human soul, the human spirit, lies in this interchange between beings dispersed and being sculpturally built up. That is how they reveal themselves. Now the things which are external and the things which human beings have within themselves, connected with the etheric body, they are linked to these peripheral forces. Silver reveals itself to be connected with the anabolic forces in certain respects, so that when you notice that the anabolic forces in human beings are being overwhelmed by the catabolic forces, you can correct this development, as a rule, with a medicine which is based on silver. But if you notice that the anabolic forces are running wild, that they are holding the human form together and are preventing it from scattering, as we might say, then you will always see that we have to make use of medicines which are connected with Saturn, which are connected with lead. So if we can understand how a human being is structured, we can have an understanding of how we have to act. It is a matter of getting into such a way of observation. Now, you see, my dear friends, the true world, the world of the spirit, lies somewhere of which it has rightly always been said that it is beyond a threshold. Human beings are on this side of the threshold. It is indeed necessary that human beings should cross this threshold to come to a true understanding, a true insight into the constitution of the cosmos. It is, however, generally dangerous for human beings to cross this threshold without any preparation. Because if human beings suffuse normal sensory perception with the kind of thoughts they have in ordinary life, and take these with them into the spiritual world across the threshold, they produce real phantasmagoria by judging things beyond the threshold in the same way as they do here. And that is why there is the spiritual being at the threshold from whom we can learn that we require completely different concepts when we cross the threshold. That phantasmagoria will make us incapable of action if we enter the spiritual world with our ordinary concepts taken from the sensory world. This guardian of the threshold is truly there to warn us that we must first obtain the ideas that we need in the spiritual world. People do not normally believe that the concepts that are of use in the spiritual world are unusually different from the concepts that are of use here in the physical world. In the physical world, for example, a part is always smaller than the whole. That is deemed to be an axiom. It is not like that in the spiritual world. There the part is always larger than the whole. You can learn that using the example of the human being. If we assume a force which human beings possess, for example, when they build up their body from the mineral component, and if we look at the forces at work in any part of the human being, then those forces which form the organs, in other words, that part of the human being, is significantly greater from a cosmic perspective than the human being as a whole. It is not so easy for you to picture the idea that the part is greater than the whole, because you are used to the sensory world. But that is indeed the case with regard to the supersensory world. Hence we have to reach a point where we recognize the possibility that in the spiritual world the part can be greater than the whole. None of our mechanics and physics applies in the spiritual world, but the direct opposite. Here in the sensory world, a straight line is the shortest path between two points. In the spiritual world, it is the longest. Because if you proceed in a straight line, you have to overcome the greatest number of obstacles. Every other direction is shorter than a straight line. We have to be quite clear that if we want to enter the spiritual world, we need the opposite concepts to what is commonplace in the physical world, in order to avoid confusion when we enter the spiritual world. That requires courage. We have to have the courage to cross the spiritual threshold, to cross that gulf. If we go through that whole thing, crossing over into the spiritual world, passing the guardian of the threshold, and arriving on the other side, if we go through that in our soul and spirit, consciously in our astral body and I, capital, then everything is well. But if you do not go through that cleanly in our I and astral body, then an illusion is created, and when this illusion in turn affects the human being, illness arises. So whenever there is some kind of illness in a person, he or she really has the guardian of the threshold within himself or herself, but in a kind of demonic reflection. So I return to the demonic about which I have already had to speak. And why is that? That is because if we look at the human being with ordinary perceptions, everything becomes mixed up. On the one side, we have the eye and astral body, and on the other side, the etheric body and physical body. And all of them are mixed up when we look at them ordinarily. So it is very important that we learn to differentiate the soul element in human beings from the physical. When the soul is in the body and you look at the human being, the soul does not appear as what it really is. The soul, in reality, is indeed light. And you will increasingly have to understand that the human soul, when looked at separately from the body, is light. Among those elements, those etheric elements with which it is associated, it belongs to light. The human soul absolutely belongs to the realm of light. We see it correctly if we see it as part of light. By contrast, the body is associated with weight. Now, I explained how weight is overcome, how the brain becomes a lot lighter than it would be outside. But the way that the body is organized, as we perceive it in its essence, it is associated with weight. Just as you get hydrogen and oxygen if you analyze water chemically, you have to divide the human being into the soul with its luminous power and the body with the impact of its weight. These two entities, the soul with its luminous power and the body with its impact, with the impact of its weight, are confusingly intermingled when we look at them with ordinary eyes. Because of that, we cannot identify the nature of the illness from looking at the body. If you organize your soul so that it can look at the human being in such a way that the nature of the illness can be revealed, and if you recognize by that means how the nature of the illness can be recognized, then the nature of the healing forces in lead and in silver will be revealed to you. But you have to take this medical life incredibly seriously and develop your meditative life with such strength in your soul that you learn to see the world, to take hold of the world differently. And that is why I now want to give you something to take away with you, which properly meditated, my dear friends, and added to the other things, will lead you to obtain the kind of relationship with special substances which these substances themselves have to the healthy and sick human being. You have to look at what I'm about to write on the blackboard as awakening the perception in your soul that what you see of the human being in normal life is not the reality, but that the reality is what you see when you bring to life in your soul what lies in these words. Then you will see the truth of the human being in the relationship between the one and the other. So far, I have spoken in such a way that you can understand the human being in general, in his or her relationship with the cosmos. Today, I want to inscribe into your soul something that will enable you to take a tiny piece of gold and look at it meditatively. I beat it into a thin leaf and thus get something greenish when I look through it like this. It looks greenish. Its greenish appearance awakens the same inner experience that is aroused by a green meadow, the green plant cover of the earth. Not just in some vague analogy, but in a precise way, because I approach the gold leaf with deeper powers of the soul. But by immersing myself properly with my soul powers in the small translucent gold leaf, the opposing soul power is also awoken. And because I have the greenish, shimmering gold leaf here, I do not just get a contrasting effect, as physiological physicists would say, but this contrasting effect contains a whole world. The impression of a shimmering world, just as everything shimmers around me in a reddish mat and bluish red light. At that moment, I know that the whole world lies in this small piece of gold. And this small piece of gold which I hold in my hand, which shimmers in a greenish color here, is actually a whole sphere. It has been compressed into this small atomistic leaf. I cannot have a piece of gold without it being a whole sphere. without it being a node for a whole sphere, so that I learn to live in the bluish red and the bluish purple of a sphere. And when you become familiar with other characteristics of gold, then you will learn to connect these other characteristics in a living way with what you receive in a kind of soul vision. You will, for example, experience in a thorough, a fundamental way, the characteristic with which you are familiar, that gold does not tolerate being combined with oxygen. You will say to yourselves, human beings live because they have oxygen, because they constantly process oxygen. In the etheric body, you saw it for yourselves, everything is different. The latter is connected with what is not anchored in the physical body. Gold is connected with the etheric body because it does not tolerate being combined with oxygen. So that precisely through this one characteristic, gold has a healing effect in the etheric body with regard to all those things which oxygen can cause in the physical body. Thus, gold is a medicine that can act properly from the center of the human being. The inner truth of the words, quote, gold is sun, close quote, is revealed to you in the shining impression of the matte blue, reddish light. It is holy sun. So here you have this one node, which simply indicates that in the cosmos, gold is sun, and that gold sun is related to the etheric body. You see, such observations lead you to understand the characteristics of substances which are required for therapy. But you will only achieve this if you take seriously, not as external words, but as a constant inner challenge to the soul, quote, see in your soul luminous power. Feel in your body the might of gravity, close quote. That is to be truly practiced. You must practice it as if your soul were to become something which truly expands outward, which is flowing light, luminous power, and your body could become something which, through its own inner longing for gravity, combines itself with the interior of the earth. You truly have to experience this incredible contrast. Then you will separate soul and body, which have to be separated. Then it continues, quote, spirit self shines out in luminous power, close quote. That is the only way you will understand the whole, because the human eye blossoms in the soul as an inner experience. Hence you also have to understand the image of the eye arising in the soul, striving outward luminously into the cosmos. Quote, the strength of God's spirit is contained in the might of gravity. Close quote. It truly was not just a superficial image, my dear friends, but something that corresponded to a deep truth when people in earlier times referred to the human body as a temple for the divine. And as much as it is true that the eye rules in the soul when the soul is conscious, it is equally true that the deity rules in the body. You must not address your body as your own, because the body does not belong to the human being. The body belongs to God. That is how it is. The human body grows out of divine forces. Only the soul within it belongs to the human being, so that you have truly to see your body as the temple of God. And it is incredibly important to know, quote, spirit self shines out in luminous power, close quote, of the soul, continue quote, the strength of God's spirit is contained in the might of gravity, close quote. God's spirit is contained in the human body, just like the eye in the human soul. But now we get to the important thing, quote, but luminous power must not take hold of the might of gravity, close quote. When human beings are asleep, it will be obvious to you that they have the soul entity and the physical body in separation. They are then separate in human beings. In that situation, the soul does not take hold of the body. But when human beings are awake, it also holds good that although the astral body and I are immersed in the physical and etheric body, there is still an inner division, an inner separation of luminous power and the might of gravity. What must not happen is that a component develops chemically, consisting of luminous power and the might of gravity. They have to be inwardly separate. They must not mix mechanically or indeed combine inwardly. They have to act in parallel in the same space, the might of the body's weight downward, the luminous power of the soul upward. That is why the following words are important. Quote, but luminous power must not take hold of the might of gravity, and neither must the might of gravity penetrate luminous power. Close quote. Those are the opposites. So in reality, my dear friends, those things which are sensory knowledge continuously mixes up. So in reality, my dear friends, those things which our sensory knowledge continuously mixes up must exist as separate entities in the human being. If you look at the human being externally with sensory knowledge, everything is mixed up. And if human beings were what normal perception sees them to be, they would always be ill. Human beings can be healthy, but our perception, our sensory perception of human beings, is always of illness. We always see human beings as ill, but that is, of course, always Maya, illusion. Because in their true self, human beings must never be as we see them. In their true being, luminous power and the might of gravity must never be mixed up. They must be inwardly separate from one another. So it must not be as happens in the case of water, where hydrogen and oxygen form a chemical compound and really disappear as such. In human beings, that only happens through sensory perception. The latter has produced the absurdity of having taken on a chemical view and looking at human beings as if they were a compound of luminous power and the might of gravity. They are separate and must remain separate, as if hydrogen and oxygen were always separate in water despite being in it together. Quote, because if luminous power takes hold of the might of gravity, close quote, that is, if luminous power really enters the might of gravity, quote, because if luminous power takes hold of the might of gravity, and if the might of gravity penetrates luminous power, then in cosmic error, soul and body combine to destruction, close quote. The destruction is illness. As I said, you have to take these things in all seriousness to such an extent that it forms your body, that you can truly look at the human being and see luminous power and the might of gravity, and that you have the feeling that they are hostile to one another when they come into contact. They come into contact in illness. And when luminous power takes a hold of the might of gravity, the physical illnesses arise. When the might of gravity penetrates luminous power, the so-called psychiatric illnesses arise. Because remember what there is. Remember that the Spirit of God lives in the body. So when luminous power takes hold of the might of gravity, the human being is illegitimately appropriating God. Now, to think about and penetrate with your feelings all these things, with the necessary moral impulse, and then to want them with what you have felt, that will teach you gradually to look at the things and processes in the world in a real way. It will give you an idea how to separate luminous power from the might of gravity when the latter has been gripped by the former by using something that will support the etheric body from the astral body through an external substance or a process in the human being. You see, if you penetrate something like that properly with the feelings in your soul, then you will also gain insight into what it is that heals in eurythmy therapy. Because the healing aspect in eurythmy therapy is fundamentally that element which takes particular account of cosmic forces in its healing action. When you do eurythmy therapy exercises with consonants, you are in the moon forces. When you develop eurythmy therapy forces using vowels, you are in the Saturn forces. So when doing eurythmy therapy, human beings directly feel their way into the cosmos with these two types of forces. It is like this, for example. Let us assume we could determine, because the key thing in medicine is, of course, the therapy, but there is no therapy if we do not have a usable diagnosis. Let us assume we could determine that the structural element is too strong in a person, that he has salt and carbohydrate structures within him which he cannot overcome. There is too much structure. If you take a real look at the most subtle effects on the organism, the symptoms can occur unobtrusively. Eurythmy using vowels, which counter such structures, can have an exceptionally beneficial effect. Or, let us assume that a small child begins to show a tendency to stammer. Well, I certainly do not want to draw any unprofessional conclusions about some cause or other of the stammer. There can, of course, be a whole range of disorders. But in all situations, the disorders associated with a stammer work in such a way that there is a predominating structural force. And that is why vowel exercises are used in eurythmy therapy for a stammer. And they can be used in the sequence, the form in which the vowels naturally come to expression in the human being. So we can indeed achieve an exceptional amount in children who show signs of a stammer with eurythmy therapy simply with the normal vowel sequence, A-E-I-O-U, if we have the necessary perseverance and love. If you reflect on all these things, my dear friends, then you will realize that it is important for you to think of the esoteric background that I gave you a few days ago, and just now as a kind of moral underpinning of your medical studies. By moral, I mean a feeling of commitment to an obligation, a feeling of commitment to establish the required constant mood in the soul through meditation, so that you encounter the world in the right way. If we had a year for these lectures, we would be able to go into much greater detail, which would then stand you in good stead in practice. But as we have only been able to give an introduction to all these things, my dear friends, it is particularly important to begin by speaking about the development of the medical powers in the human being, to give you these medical hints in particular. Because if you now embark on your medical studies with these esoteric hints, you will see things will be different. However, they might be even more difficult. When a person of today with a somewhat dull mind, people's minds today are already dulled in primary school, something which is reinforced in secondary school, and then they go on to university, when such a person with a dull mind starts to study medicine, he might survive the first or second year through a certain inner stubbornness, if through his social background he feels some moral whip driving him on. But he will not become a physician. He will become a person employed by society to pretend to be a physician, but he will not be a physician. Now you will, of course, develop a subtle power of soul through letting such things act on your soul powers. And sometimes the way that psychology and physiology and pathology, which form the basis of medicine, act on you will be painful. It will truly feel as if sometimes you are given stones instead of bread. But you will nevertheless be able to obtain something even from those stones by yourselves. And the things provided will still, to a certain degree, be relevant. You will be able to learn something despite the difficult path on which you have embarked. There is no alternative, because at present the world with its materialism is still very powerful, and we have to work in it in one way or another. We have to work out of the situation in which we find ourselves when we are part of the world. And so you have to become physicians in the way that the world demands, and suffuse your medical studies with what you can obtain from here. And that is why I want to repeat once more. you will indeed, my dear friends, have the opportunity to come together, to connect in the way that I have spoken about. You should have complete confidence in the way that the medical section at the Gertianum is managed by me together with Dr. Wegmann. It is precisely the kind of medicine which can be researched here, which can show you, forgive the paradoxical way of putting it, how it can truly be experienced in human life here. You will be able to receive it, and so what you must do once you are out in the world again, when something or other occurs to you, is to write to us with your wishes, your heart's desires. And what the one person writes will receive an answer, which will be sent to everyone in the monthly newsletter. In this way, your external medical studies will be suffused by the means available at this time with those things which we can provide today. You see, basically, there are still exceptionally few people, they can really only be young people, who can build a bridge between the spiritual intentions of Dornach and what holds materialistic power out in the world. It can only be a few people at the moment, and really only those who are engaged in their studies. Why? What you initially hear as coming from Dornach in various fields would be nonsense if it actually were from Dornach. On one occasion when I had to give a lecture to a group of students about a particular chapter of therapy, all the students from the whole faculty were there, as well as a full professor, a real professor. Now you see, my dear friends, I could see that he came to the lecture because he wanted to find confirmation for his belief that I would talk a lot of rubbish, as medical amateurs do. It was a study in metamorphosis to see how, on the one hand, he became increasingly annoyed inwardly, but on the other hand experienced astonishment, because he had to concede that it was not rubbish. But he could not, of course, acknowledge that because that would completely contradict what he had for decades considered to be true and accurate. Indeed, the most one could expect from the gentleman was, I spoke to him afterward when it became clear, that he would refuse to come anywhere near the subject. He would not have needed to steer well clear of it if he had seen that it was rubbish. Then he could easily have made the usual disparaging remarks. He also thought that he could easily do it, but he couldn't. And so the most one could ask of a professor like that was that he would refuse to come near the subject. You could not demand more of him. But young people have to adopt quite a different attitude. They do not yet carry all that baggage with them, so they can come to grips with these things for the benefit of humankind. And when that begins to happen, my dear friends, then we will reach a point at which gradually, perhaps faster than we think, the Gertianum's spirituality will become part of medicine. But as matters stand, we have to begin by continuing, in all seriousness, with the way in which, as Dr. Wegmann said, you approached her so that we can establish in full trust the connection with those things of which, in reality, a true medical course should consist. A medical course which has to flow into today's general materialistic medicine. You can do a lot for yourselves in this respect, but also a lot for the world and sick humanity, if you consider the things you have heard now not as something ephemeral, but as the starting point for those things in which you have made such an exceptionally positive beginning. In this spirit, my dear friends, let us remain united. Let us remain united in such a way that you retain your center in Dornach here, at the Gertianum, and truly adhere to that center, so that it can be active through you in the world. That is what I wish to give you, to take away with you like a kind of reminder. I might say, then things will turn out well, then other things will follow from what we have discussed and experienced here. You can have a feeling what that ideal should be in a beautiful way, but you can also turn it into a real way of life. So, my dear friends, that is what we will do. And, quote, see in your soul luminous power, feel in your body the might of gravity, spirit self shines out in luminous power. The strength of God's spirit is contained in the might of gravity. But luminous power must not take hold of the might of gravity, and neither must the might of gravity penetrate luminous power. Because if luminous power takes hold of the might of gravity, and if the might of gravity penetrates luminous power, then in cosmic error, soul and body combine to destruction. And that is the end of Lecture 8, which is the end of the Christmas course, and the next part of this will be what was called the Easter course, given in April of 1924, the end of Lecture 8.